Saddle up with your host of the Mainly Broncos podcast, Cameron Parker of PredominantlyOrange.com, Matty Malls, Brandon Miller, and MHRT Network's Marcus Boggs as they break down the NFL with a mainly Denver Broncos focus.
Saddle up your horses!
Pitter-patter, let's get at her. It's another episode of the Mainly Broncos podcast. It is good to be back in the saddle, hosting the Mainly Broncos podcast. Thank you to Brandon, Maddie, and Marcus for holding the fort down and doing a show without me. I'm trending upwards. I was dealt the unfortunate COVID sickness, but I, like I said, I'm trending upwards, and I am sounding better and feeling better. Just waiting until I see that negative result. As far as COVID. So thank you guys so much for as always, sticking with us. And Brandon, no Maddie and Marcus tonight, but Brandon, thank you so much for holding the fort down.
Yeah, that was an interesting episode.
Yeah, I heard
I'm glad I'm no longer the host for tonight.
I heard that a little birdie told me, granted it was you, A little birdie told me that you had a brain fart, and
I mixed up the schedule.
You know, it's really,
it happens.
You know, Brandon, it is really not that hard to pull out your phone.
I know. I didn't have a
mobile app.
I messed up. I should have had it pulled up. Okay, so in my defense, I was, I knew the Chiefs game was coming up. And I saw the news that we were flexed out of the primetime Sunday night football game. And I just didn't like open the schedule to confirm. And I was like, oh, like that's the next game. Like that must be the next game. And then the Ravens is the game after. So I just got my weeks mixed up. But I definitely went on about a 5-minute tear talking about the Chiefs game that is not for 2 weeks.
It's all right. Just means that you are well ahead in advance in previewing the Broncos and Chiefs game. Granted, there might be a lot of factors that are going to be happening from now until the Chiefs game. But also, if there's one thing that we know about the Denver Broncos season, every single game so far to this particular point has been pretty dang predictable. So I'm not a betting man. But, I mean, I would say that the Broncos having a likely scenario of where we currently stand now and where we have currently sat in the weeks prior, that it'd be a pretty safe bet is that, you know, that the Broncos would be the exact same team going to the Kansas City Chiefs game. So, I mean, at least you have that.
Yeah, I think my official on-record prediction is that we're going to lose. So, I'm 2 weeks ahead of that.
Yeah, so, I mean... Yeah, at least you kind of got ahead of the game. But you doing good? You doing good, Brandon?
Sort of. Well, I just updated my graphics card in my computer because they're suddenly actually affordable now after being disgustingly overpriced for the last 2.5 years. Well, yeah, because basically what had happened was basically every GPU on the market that you could possibly buy was sold out for crypto mining. And then people were like reselling them for like insane scalpers rates. So I got a new one and I installed it. And now I'm having like some weird lag issues, which is really bugging me. So today at work was interesting, but I'm here. I survived.
He is living. He is breathing. And like myself, I am living and breathing. And we're here for another episode of the Mainly Broncos podcast. Like we said, Matty Malls and Marcus could not make it tonight. We hope that they'll be back here soon. Brandon and I will have it all settled for you as far as this preview show between the Broncos and the Baltimore Ravens, not the Kansas City Chiefs. Anyway,
no, that's in 2 weeks. Yeah. As I have learned explicitly, and I learned my lesson. I have the schedule.
That was intentional, Brandon. That was intentional. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So for starters, it certainly seemed like there was a possibility that the Denver Broncos were going to be out quite a few players, and that they weren't going to get back. I should say maybe their wide receiver one at this point, and maybe that's a conversation for an also another day. Brandon, it appears that Jerry Jeudy went from being on the trend of being out officially to he was a limited participant in practice on Friday. And I'm sure they do some practices on Saturday or walkthroughs or whatever. And if he's a part of walkthrough, then that will probably trend more to a game time decision, which it certainly seems like it's trending to a game time decision. He was officially listed on the final injury report of Friday as questionable. So if there's any possible way that the Broncos can have Jerry Jeudy back, that would significantly help an offense. Now, whatever that means, but significantly help an offense that is in dire, dire need to have, frankly, their unquestioned wide receiver one back in the lineup.
Unquestioned. I think Cortland Sutton listens to this podcast and he's going to rip you on Twitter. I opened Twitter for the weekly, like 15 minutes that I open it now before this show, just to see what's going on. And I saw that Jerry Jeudy was trending and I just kind of rolled my eyes a little bit because I've seen it about 11 times this season and I actually didn't click it. So I don't know what that was about. And I'm glad to hear it's a positive, just news about him potentially being available and not some other thing that's going on. But if you want some positivity on the offensive side of the ball and you're a Broncos fan, just go watch some Caleb Williams tape from his game against Utah, where he actually also put, I believe it was "fuck Utah" on his fingernails. So that was nice. This dude is insane.
He is supposed to be available in 2024, which just so happens to be when the Denver Broncos are back on the restore as potentially of maybe a top 10 pick. So if you are going to be within the tank down process or tank process, you know, maybe there's the possibility of, say, in 2023, that the Denver Broncos decide to tank for Caleb Williams.
We have the perfect quarterback for it.
And
it was a galaxy brand move by George Payton.
Yeah. That's
trade all those picks for Russell Wilson so we can tank more effectively to get Caleb Williams.
Right. There were,
if he's still around,
there were four players that were ruled out. And one of the wide receivers that we will talk about is on here, and he actually suffered a setback, and that being KJ Hamler. He had been dealing with hamstring injuries basically coming out of college, in college, and now in the pros. And KJ Hamler is still dealing with a hamstring injury, and he was ruled as out for Sunday's game. Dakota Allen, one of the newer players that they had just acquired, he is out. Fullback tight end Andrew Beck is out. Cortland Sutton, just so happened to pop up on the injury report with an illness. I felt that, buddy. And he is listed as questionable. Long snapper Jacob Bobenmoyer is on the injury report with a wrist injury. He was limited, not unlimited, but limited.
Mr. Unlimited. I'm sorry. Mr. Limited.
And as we said before, Jerry.
Why am I like this?
And as we said before, Jerry Jeudy did not participate on Wednesday and Thursday but was limited on Friday, and he is listed as questionable. And Kawan Williams did not participate on Wednesday, and the back-to-back days he was listed as limited. And they said that there is a decent chance that he is good to go on Sunday, but he is listed as questionable. And then from Kendall Hinton, Kareem Jackson, Draymond Jones, Brandon McManus showing up on the injury report, Dalton Reisner, who has been the team's most frequent starter. I think he started every single game on that Denver Broncos offensive line, is expected to play. He was a full participant. He was limited Wednesday, Thursday, and full on Friday. And Jalen Virgil was full all week. So every single one of those players from Hinton down to Virgil are full. And the expectation is that all of them will be available to play.
It'll definitely be interesting. I mean, I think the biggest name to me that to keep an eye on just in general with this team is like you said, Jerry Jeudy. So that'll be something to keep an eye on.
And as far as the Baltimore Ravens injury report, a wide receiver that I was definitely interested in the draft. I believe he was coming out of Oklahoma State. Tylan Wallace, he has a hamstring injury. He was ruled as out. But of note, doesn't necessarily mean that they are out, but maybe some names to certainly watch here. Ronnie Stanley was limited on Wednesday and Thursday, but he did not participate on Friday. Deshaun Phillips did not participate on Thursday and Friday. He is listed as questionable.
Two of the interesting
Kyle Hamilton, by the way, sorry. He was limited and in full, but he is questionable. But Marlon Humphrey, he's probably going to play, but he was do not participate, limited and full, and he's listed as questionable.
Yeah, so I was going to say the biggest things that stick out to me looking at the Ravens side is Kyle Hamilton, Marlon Humphrey, and Marcus Peters all showing up on the injury report in some fashion. Not that they're all going to be out, but that is a significant amount of their secondary that is potentially vulnerable. Not that we can take advantage of that because, you know, who knows, but that'll be interesting to monitor as well. Lamar Jackson also actually was on there with a quad injury. It doesn't seem very notable or major, but just to throw that out there.
Yes.
The Lamar Jackson on the Ravens side, not the Lamar Jackson that we just signed.
By the way, kudos to Tom Pelissero for distinctly, creating that tweet and to rise up the just the Twitterverse, I should say, as far as getting everybody and their mother basically freaking out that the Lamar Jackson was signing with the Denver Broncos. Yeah, so anybody that does not know was that there is a Lamar Jackson that came from the University of Nebraska, and he had been in the league for, I want to say, a few times, but he's only played, I think, in like six games or something, and it was all with the New York Jets. And so the Broncos signed him, and the Pelissero sort of ran with it and said that Lamar Jackson is going to be signing with the Broncos, and Twitter basically ran with it. So as far as the game, and I know we went over the injury report, but Brandon, what is the first initial breakdown for you as far as this game?
The first thing that I think about when I look at this game is what is going to happen on the rushing defense side of the ball for us, because that seems to be something that is incredibly up and down. As we've talked about several times, Derrick Henry obviously seems to be someone that we can keep relatively in check in every game that he plays against us. And Josh Jacobs has a career game every time we see him. And the Baltimore Ravens are a notoriously run heavy team. Not only with obviously Lamar Jackson, but you also have, several of their running backs have been on and off the injury report just overall this year. I know J.K. Dobbins returned to practice, but I think it's been confirmed he's not going to be coming off of IR, so that'll be kind of nice. You have Gus Edwards, the Gus Bus, who has been kind of also off and on, and I'm not totally sure how healthy he is, but he also like had a few games where he was healthy that he just kind of blew up. And then to my chagrin, I placed a bet on him to score 2 touchdowns and he only scored one. And then the other one went to their other running back. And I was incredibly upset about this, but it'll be just interesting to see, like, you know, what version of the Broncos run defense are we getting? Are we getting the one where we seem to actually be able to stop players and make them lose yardage and get tackles for a loss? Or are we playing are we fielding the team that basically lets them blow open huge holes and then we miss tackles? And not to call out Justin Simmons, because I love you, but dude, he had some issues with that in a few games this year where he kind of didn't really wrap people up okay, and then they just ran past him and got like a huge gain. So that's gonna be like my biggest thing that I'm paying attention to. Is just the running game overall for Baltimore, but really our running defense, our rushing defense.
Yeah, you know, it's not the same, Brandon, but it almost feels like the Mike Shanahan offense, where it's almost like you plug any back that's in that rushing offense and they're going to succeed. I mean, because for one, it's led by Lamar Jackson, but two, anybody could really succeed in that offense as far as a running back goes. And so J.K. Dobbins being one of them, Gus Edwards being one of them, Justice Hill, you know, being another. And so it's basically just been a successful plug-and-play offense, and so much so that the Ravens are the second best, maybe the best run offense in the entire National Football League. They average just over 160 yards a game. I think it's like 162 yards a game, which is an absurd number. And obviously, they are a little bit low in terms of, say, passing offense. But it wasn't just that long ago, as far as like maybe what, like a year ago, where the Denver Broncos were just lost in translation almost against this Ravens team at home. And basically there was just big play after big play given up through the passing game. And so I think it's almost imperative that, yes, you know, you want to make sure you're fitting your run fits really well, playing disciplined football, but do not get so caught up in the rush defense that you are, in essence, going to be forgetting about the fact that there are some wide receivers and some weapons within this offense, you know, that you can't lose sight of. You know, Devin Duvernay being another one, a little bit of a versatile player. You know, play him on special teams, and at times this season has been Lamar Jackson's favorite wide receiver. Rashad Bateman is another player that's been, you know, kind of steady so far this year. So I think it's almost imperative that the Broncos don't get too carried away, you know, with stopping the run, that they just completely forget about the back end, because Lamar Jackson also has proven in the course of his career that he's not the, you know, the Aaron Rodgers of the world, or, you know, the Patrick Mahomes of the world, or, you know, some of those great passers that's been in the National Football League, you know, but he has definitely shown growth over the years, almost like his collegiate career. He has shown that he's been a much better passer as the years and years progress, basically making people just forget about the fact that, you know what, he is actually a much better passer than people give him credit for. So they can't lose sight of that.
No, he's definitely improved his passing significantly just since he came into the league overall. Although there also were some times where it seemed like it regressed a little bit, which is kind of interesting, but not nearly back to, you know, what he was when he was coming into the league. So I do think that on the passing side of their offense, that'll also be something to watch, especially since we're missing some of our players in the secondary. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think this is going to be another very boring game. And the only major excitement that would come from the Ravens getting like a 40-yard run, which is obviously not good for us.
But also the Ravens are a really good football team, though. You know, I mean, especially led by John Harbaugh, you know, maybe, you know, there we should not be out of the realm of possibility that the Ravens put up a decent number of points on this team. Obviously, we were talking about the wide receivers, but we know the true wide receiver of this football team, and it is Mark Andrews. I mean, Mark Andrews is pretty much wide receiver one for this offense, and it's basically just been led, you know, all the way. As we said, so there's James Prochet, Devin Duvernay, DeMarcus Robinson. Rashad Bateman is on IR, so there's, you know, don't need to worry about Bateman. But, you know, now we've already started to see, you know, another tight end really emerge himself within this, and that was Isaiah Likely, the guy from, I want to say, it was Coastal Carolina. Another athletic, you know, type of tight end that, you know, you pair him with Mark Andrews, you know, I mean, you're looking at a pretty decent duo of tight ends there. But it is still led by the running game. But, you know, it's still like there are guys on this team that you can't lose sight of.
I almost actually brought up Isaiah Likely now that you mention him. And obviously Mark Andrews, because the Achilles heel of this team for a very, very long time has been stopping tight ends. Although it kind of seems like that's been a little bit better this year, although we haven't played against Travis Kelce yet. So knock on wood. But I would definitely be interested to see what the game plan is to try to stop them, because that could be pretty ugly, unfortunately. But we did see in the game against the Chargers with Gerald Everett, who has been a pretty decent tight end. We were able to pretty much keep him in check. So I don't know if our you know, tight end woes are completely behind us. This might be a good test for that.
And this is, on the flip side of this is going to be a dogfight from the Broncos offense perspective, because the starters for this Ravens defense is pretty incredible. I mean, you have, listen to their starters here. You have Justin Matabuke as the left defensive end. Travis Jones, rookie from UConn, really wanted him. Marcus wanted him. Basically, everybody that's a part of the Mainly Broncos podcast wanted him. So Travis Jones, Calais Campbell, the former Colorado guy, Jason Pierre-Paul, Roquan Smith, the new addition that they acquired at the trade deadline, Patrick Queen, Tyus Bowser, Marcus Peters, Chuck Clark, Geno Stone, the former Iowa kid, and Marlon Humphrey. And Daryl Worley, of course, in that mix as well. Kyle Hamilton being questionable. But, yeah, there are some absolute dudes on that defense. So it is going to be some tough sledding for this team, and especially with an offense that is just so inept, you know, so inept at times during this regular season. They have to figure out a way, how can we schematically find a weakness within this Ravens team? Because that it will be some tough sledding against this team. And to what you talked about, Brandon, there is a window of opportunity where this game could be very, very boring, to where it's almost like it's an old-fashioned NFC West game, or just an old-fashioned NFL game where you're just relying heavy on defense, and the score at the end of the day is a lot like the scores of the first weeks of the season for the Broncos, you know, where it's the 49ers against the Broncos, but the Broncos came out on top like 11-10. So it's going to be like such a it's possible it could be such a boring defensive game.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it could also be very not boring, but in a bad way, because Russell Wilson looks terrible and the Ravens just kill us. So I would almost rather hope for a more boring game. But we will see. I'm just I'm considering firing up the Gus Edwards bet again. Just to throw that out there. Probably not going to, but it's semi-tempting.
Just a little bit. And as far as passing yards per game, now granted, this is something of note. Now granted, the passing has been at times, you know, a little bit skeptical so far this year. But if there is a weakness of allowing yards this year, it will be that Baltimore secondary. According to the total defense that I'm pulling up for passing, they allow 253 yards per game. I should say about 254 yards per game if you round up, which would put them at sixth as far as passing defense, and as far as, you know, the team that's allowed the most yardage, so there's at least some there, you know, at least within that regard. But yeah, and maybe that's just one of those cases where having Jerry Jeudy for a game like this is really vital, you know, for this team, because with the way that the Broncos have been able to utilize him, you know, we talk so much about the misdirection, and especially and granted, it didn't even look like, you know, they were using this is just me, but in the last game, it just looked like they weren't even using the Clint Kubiak offense last week. It's almost like they reverted back to the Nathaniel Hackett offense last week.
Much of it is, I mean, even with the Clint Kubiak on the plays, that might have still been the Nathaniel Hackett offense. It's just that Clint calls it better, which is sad.
Yeah,
but it definitely went down.
But, you know, especially from when we were able to see, like, the rollouts, you know, and just the, it looked like the efficiency was there, you know, 2 weeks ago, right? You know, so and getting him out of, you know, harm's way on rollouts. So maybe the Broncos find a way where they can bring that back. And especially with Jerry Jeudy maybe returning to fold, they're going to need a player like that, especially with what they were able to do on those easy slant plays and, you know, and easy connection plays that maybe they were able to use Kendall Hinton on those easy connection timing throws. There's a way you can use that for, say, a guy like Jerry Jeudy, who creates that successful separation. So maybe there's a way that you can integrate that within your offense and have it be at least somewhat successful. What I'm trying to say is I think there's a possibility that we see more of what we saw against I forget who it was. The weeks are starting to run together, but it was before they played the Carolina Panthers. It's starting to run together for me. But I hope we see the offense that we had seen at that point. I think it was the Vikings, I think.
Need to look up the schedule now?
Yes, exactly. I need to look up the schedule. But anyway, I think that we I think we see that kind of offense. But yeah, because the other thing too is I get what the Broncos are trying to do as far as establish a running game, you know. But if you also have a hot hand and you have a hot, say, let's just say Russell Wilson's the hot hand, you want to make sure that you are still feeding the beast, you know. And so I just, if they ever get to a point, especially with this team, where their weakness is passing, they have to feed it.
If Russell Wilson is the hot hand in this game, I will cry.
I mean, it's true. Yeah, there would be... That would mean that there's a possibility that Russ is cooking, right? That Russell Wilson...
Don't ever say that. I don't want to ever hear that again. I can't.
Hey.
Nope.
I'm just saying.
Nope.
It was the Raiders... Or was it the, it was the Raiders, I believe.
The Raiders game, yeah.
Yeah. See, Vikings, Raiders, it all sounds the same. So one thing that I wanted to touch base on was Russell Wilson, you know, because there's been much to do about him this season and the stuff that had been leaking potentially about him maybe even being the sole contributor and problem. I know before the episode, maybe you kind of called it 1A, which would mean that he is the problem, as far as assuming. But I don't know if I would go that far, Brandon. But Russ's play has definitely significantly damaged this Broncos offense this year.
Okay, sorry, 1B.
But the thing that's just so odd for me, and one of the reasons why it's hard for me to certainly put him in that category, just again, I'm not trying to sound like a Wilson apologist, but what I'm trying to say is, like, it just seems odd that Wilson would completely forget how to play football, or not just that, but just like completely forget how to see the field.
Oh, he can't read anything.
You know, and so it's, and especially with the amount of injuries and the amount of injuries that are mounting up at a alarming rate, which is, this is maybe the most amount of injuries that the Broncos have certainly sustained in a season and in the off season. And so it's one of those things where, you know, what are we looking at as far as, you know, as far as maybe a sole contributor. And then you have a head coach who has his head so far up his butt that he can't decide his left hand from his right hand. And so I think that Russell is definitely a huge, huge part of the problem as far as his performance and as far as his play. But I don't know necessarily if Russ is to the point where he's just like completely forgotten, you know, how to play quarterback altogether, because it just feels like so steep of a decline that we're seeing, Brandon, from the quarterback position, that it's like, I mean, if he's declined that much, he's definitely declined that much. And there's definitely moments within the tape this year that do suggest the fact that he's declined. But it just makes me wonder, has he truly, truly forgotten to play quarterback that much? Or is it just, this whole season has just been a big, big adjustment period. That's another point for me too. Is like, has this season just been a huge adjustment period for him, and getting adjusted to a new city, a new team, that when things aren't right, he just reverts to being a deer in the headlights right now.
I don't know, but he looks bad. That's all I know. And I don't know if it's going to get better. We'll see. I can hope. That's all I can do.
But to give you the side of it, though, why do you think he's 1A or maybe the main problem?
Oh, I mean, if you think that's it, that's what you want to know. I can't tell if he's 1A or Nathaniel Hackett's 1A and Russ is 1B, but they're both up there. They both share the blame. I would put it more on Russ, because even if Nathaniel Hackett's offense is terrible and he's a bad head coach, he's a bad offensive play caller, and even if all of that is true, and there have also been reports that he has not lost the locker room, but Russell Wilson is starting to, even if all of that's true, Russ is still the guy that's actually executing this offense on the field. He can tell Hackett, don't do that, do this instead. If he's, you know, truly the Hall of Fame quarterback who can, you know, fix this team, then he should be able to transcend a terrible head coach. I mean, people were talking about him having a terrible head coach in Seattle for years, right? And transcend having a bad offensive line, same thing. So I would put the blame more on Russell Wilson, because he is the one responsible for executing the product, and he has probably more say than we know in the offense, because we've given up so much to bring him here. And also he's on the field. He can just call an audible if he doesn't like what he sees and run a different play, but he doesn't know what he sees because he can't read anything on the field. So I don't know. That's why I think it's more on Russell Wilson than it is.
And
Russell Wilson's been there. He won a Super Bowl against us. Nathaniel Hackett's a rookie head coach. I mean, I still think he's bad, but I put more of the blame on Russ.
Well, you know, and to the point, though, I mean, granted, he was younger and he was developing and he was, you know, he ousted Matt Flynn, right? I mean, you know, so I mean, like, he was growing, you know, as a quarterback. But I will say, you know, to this point, there's just a lot of bizarre factors that are creeping in with this team, because it's like, again, you know, I think that while there were competing and butting heads, you know, with potentially some of the same scenarios with, you know, offensive line and, you know, competing with your head coach that he's seeing in Denver, the one thing that's different is, like, this is your first year and you're, you know, and there's just a lot of competing problems where the offensive line is struggling so bad that, and injured so bad that you're relying on fourth and fifth stringers, you know, or really just, or I should say fourth and fifth stringers and Dalton Reisner at left guard. And then you continue that and you are talking about your head coach and, you know, okay, and should we run this play or should we run this play and maybe have the balls to actually audible a play. And, you know, I don't know necessarily that side of the coin. You know, is Russ, you know, does he not feel like he's taking that much of an advantage to where he is, you know, trying to audible out of plays and Nathaniel Hackett saying, no, you know, we're going to run this play or, you know, or, you know, we're going to end up being to where, you know, Russ will give you some free reign to audible out of plays if we need to. Because there are moments in, you know, plays where it certainly looks like Russ is calling off a play, you know, but it's just interesting because, like, again, Brandon, it's like it's the first year dynamics where it's like, I don't know the answer, you know, and so and especially with, and this is just the unfortunate thing on maybe where I'm at, where it's like, because it's the first year and we've seen Russell play this at such a high level, it feels like it's much easier to blame a first-year incompetent head coach right now, you know. But I think that you brought up a really interesting point, you know, that Russ has played so well over his career that he should be able to, you know, overmask these issues, you know, with the way that we're playing. Because, you know, theoretically, Hall of Fame quarterbacks are supposed to be playing at a high level. The one thing I will say, though, is, if you were to compare it, say, to the Peyton Manning situation to the Russell Wilson situation, you know, was Peyton Manning had a current head coach that was already there in John Fox, you know, and this is just a new system and a new head coach that, you know, just there's just still everything there. It just feels like, and just so we're talking about something competing within like week 11. It's like, guys, we need to get our crap together, you know? And so at some point the egos need to be put aside, whether that is Russell, you know, or whether that is Nathaniel Hackett, like, guys, like, we need to get it together, whoever is to blame. And again, I don't know that answer. I really don't. Like, Brandon and myself, like, we might actually think we know or don't know, you know, what it is as far as who is.
Oh, I definitely don't think I know.
Yeah. But
I feel like I've been saying that every week. I feel like I've been saying every week we have to get it together, and I just don't know if it's going to happen. That's where I'm at.
And one thing's for sure, it makes for a hard podcast to talk about because the Broncos are struggling, and it makes for a hard podcast to talk about for the last 6 years, you know, when the Broncos as a team are just overall struggling. So, but yeah, hopefully the Broncos can be able to get it together. Hopefully they can get it together against the Baltimore Ravens. And look, maybe this is the game where Russell Wilson throws for 3 touchdowns or 4 touchdowns or, you know, and actually has the game that
I would cry.
I would cry happy tears. I would cry happy tears because that just so happened to be the game that we all wanted, and it was against the Baltimore Ravens. So, so who knows? Again, I'm not saying it's going to happen, it would just be funny the way that, and apropos with the way that things are going, where we say one thing and then here comes another. So to round it all out, Brandon, I imagine that you and I have the same opponent, or I should say the same team winning the game, but final score predictions or team that is going to come out on top.
I mean, I definitely think the Ravens are going to win. I don't really know a score, although this kind of feels like it could be more of a blowout than I would like to freely admit. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, that's what I talked about earlier, right? Because I said that, like, the Ravens are such a good coach football team. Can't say the same thing for the Broncos.
This could be like a 27-14 type game.
And then on the other side of the coin, it could be a 13-10 game. One thing I will say, as far as back to the defense for a little bit, Marquise Brown was one of the wide receivers that was burning the Broncos a few times. There are some decent wide receivers that are quick for the Ravens, but none of them, I don't think, have that speed like Marquise Brown did. I will say that there's at least that possibility, but I also subtly think that as far as a defense, and the defense that has been solely intact as far as a Vic Fangio defense, that this is also the team that allowed the 100 yards rushing, as far as the consecutive 100 yards rushing streak. And we all know what happened as far as Vic Fangio shooting his mouth off, in the media, and, you know, being really pissed off about that. Maybe subconsciously and consciously, that we are looking at it, that maybe the defense plays at its very high level to where maybe we get a really, really good defensive battle. So I would not vote against and vote, and say that a possibility of, you know, a blowout might happen, because, yeah, I agree with you. It might very well might happen. I will say it's going to be a slugfest, defensive slugfest, and I'll say 13-10 Ravens.
All right, well, we're on opposite sides of the spectrum then.
But, I mean, we have the Ravens winning, and because, like, we want the Broncos to prove us differently. We want the Broncos to prove us differently, and hopefully they can. Hopefully they can on Sunday. And hopefully the Broncos can get us better things to cheer about. And hopefully Jerry Jeudy plays. You know, hopefully Jerry Jeudy plays so we can at least have.
I will say one thing that I'm sort of excited about to watch on offense is I would like to see if he plays, because actually I think he was on the injury report. Hold on one second. Let me pull this up. Let me pull this back up. Jalen Virgil.
He was full all week.
Not Jalen Virgil. Was Brandon Johnson.
Okay. And why Brandon Johnson?
I just think he has been surprisingly good. And actually there is some good news with Russell Wilson and the team in that it was Russ's 300th career touchdown and Brandon Johnson's first, and Russ told Brandon that he wanted him to keep the ball because it was his first touchdown, which is pretty cool. That's pretty cool. But I think he's been surprisingly good. And we need wide receiver help.
I will say you weren't really talking about Virgil, Brandon. But I
no, he was on the injury report. I thought it was Brandon Johnson.
I will say, regardless if Sutton plays or regardless of, I really, really think the Broncos need to play Virgil more, and maybe he's just not at that point of learning the offense just yet. But they really, really need to play Virgil more. Because he's just a downfield threat. And clearly, in the one time that he's been able to be on the field, he has a touchdown catch. So hopefully, you know, we'll be talking about Jalen Virgil's name in many years to come wearing a Denver Broncos uniform. But I really, really want to see more. I really want to see more in terms of as far as Jalen Virgil.
Jalen Virgil, too, could be interesting just because we don't have KJ Hamler and we kind of need that vertical speed. But I'm still excited to see what Brandon Johnson does.
And by the way, this is huge news, not NFL news, but Deion Sanders and his associates have spent this week recruiting on-field staff support and transfer portal players to Colorado. While a deal isn't finalized, Sanders has been preparing for his exit to Boulder for after the SWAC title game. So Deion Sanders in prime time is coming to the University of Colorado. And I tell you, I tweeted it today, but I really give huge kudos to the Colorado Buffaloes and Rick George, the athletic director, for going out and realizing that you have a weak conference in the Pac-12 and going out and getting arguably the hottest college football name and head coach in Deion Sanders and bringing him to the University of Colorado. Really, Colorado has been a team that has been absolutely in the dumps. In the dumps. And so to see Deion come to the University of Colorado, I think is great for Deion, and it's great for the Pac-12, and it's great for NCAA football. So huge kudos to the University of Colorado for making that happen.
Yeah, that's actually nuts. They're offering more than $5 million per year for him to be the coach.
Which
damn.
Which feels a little slightly low. You know, I mean, Matt Rhule signed, I believe it was 8 for 72, which was like 9.
I can't believe he got that
for Nebraska. But I mean, like, at the same time, it's just like that also puts him within the top 12, top 13 most highest paid people within college football as far as coaches. But still, so the fact that like the $5 million a year is like not even top 13, top 14, top 15, you know, it's probably top 30 money, maybe even top 40 money, you know, within that 5-6 million a year, you know, threshold. But yeah, I got to say, I am super, super pumped to see, you know, Colorado, which is crazy to say, because I'm a Huskers fan, you know, but once you leave the Big Ten, you want to see your teams that you left from the Big 12 succeed. And yeah, absolutely. I think that him going to CU, I think, is a huge deal. I will say it's going to be interesting. Does he see Colorado as a stepping stone job? People said that before, but does he see Colorado as a stepping stone job to, you know, the Auburns of the world or the, you know, some of those like maybe more high profile schools? So it'd be interesting. It would be interesting.
Who knows? I'll be fascinated to watch that.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the Mainly Broncos podcast. For Brandon, myself, follow Brandon at Brandon Miller PO, follow myself at Cameron Parker PO, and follow the Twitter handle at Mainly Broncos. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the show.